We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
This is Greg Olson, here to tell you about my new podcast, TE1. On the show, I had a chance to talk to my fellow tight ends who have revolutionized the position from an extra lineman to a dual threat superstar. And just like my guests have changed the game, this year, NFLSundayTicket.tv is revolutionizing your NFL viewing experience. Stream all the live out-of-market NFL games every Sunday on your favorite devices and never miss a moment from your favorite players. Visit NFLSundayTicket.tv and use the promo code GREG88 at checkout and get 15% off your subscription. That's NFLSundayTicket.tv and the promo code GREG88. Subscribe to TE1 and get NFLSundayTicket.tv, an unmatched dual threat.
Welcome to the Fantasy Football Report, a RotoViz Radio news show. I'm Hassan Rahim. Joining me today on the show is Dave Cabin. You may know Dave as a senior fantasy analyst over here at the Viz or the host of the Radio Shift Flagship Pod alongside Matt Friedman. Dave is one of the engines who makes RotoViz work. We had such a great time having Dave on in week one of the 2019 season. We decided to run it back this year, even though Blair's not here. You can find Dave on Twitter at DaveCabinFF. Dave, thank you so much for joining me. How's it going this evening?
Oh, you know, I'm doing great. Glad that football is back, that I get to be the first guest two seasons in a row, and that I get to talk with you, Hassan. So this is just a terrific night. Things are going great.
Yeah, and you know what? Let's just jump right in. This is going to be our FFPC stat attack of the day. Both Dallas Goedert and Zach Ertz, they both had strong outings today against the Washington football team defense, but Goedert really showed his colors. He caught 8 of 9 targets for 101 yards and a touchdown, and he registered a whopping 28.1 FFPC points. Dave, do you think Goedert continues to out-target Zach Ertz going forward this season, or is it a one-time blip? And this Washington defense, do you feel comfortable streaming tight ends against them?
Yeah, I mean, I think that I would feel very comfortable streaming tight ends against this Washington defense, even if we didn't have, you know, this crazy performance by Goddard and then also this performance by Ertz. Of course, we do have to kind of keep in mind with the way this team is constituted, a lot of things are going to go through tight ends for the Eagles. So I don't think that you can just say, if there's a team playing the Eagles, their tight end's going to put up a million points. But to the question about Dallas Goedert versus Zach Ertz, listen, I think that Goedert is really, really good. He's shown us now enough times that this guy has what it takes to be an elite receiver in this league. Having said that, I think what we're going to see this season is a bit more of a bounce back and forth between the two of them in being the guy that's going to really lead this team from the tight end position. I still, though, don't want to get ahead of myself here, and I'm going to say that overall we see Ertz putting up more points than Goddard, but nonetheless, very encouraging performance for the younger tight end.
Yeah, I mean, it was actually a little bit frustrating because I have a lot of Ertz, and realistically, the reason I have a lot of Ertz is because his price really dipped to really cheap levels in my opinion, because I had him like pegged as the wide receiver one in this offense, and surprise surprise, I was very off on that after 1 week. You know, I mean, Jalen Reagor was out there. He caught one long pass for 55 yards. DeSean Jackson saw a lot of work, but here's something that really bothers me: JJ Arcega-Whiteside didn't draw any targets. There's a massive need in the Eagles' receiving core, and here's a second round pick who's unable to get off the schneid. In fact, rookie wide receiver John Hightower appears to be drawing targets ahead of him. And you know, here I was thinking it was Quez Watkins season, but he's on IR. So what are we doing with Arcega-Whiteside? Are you dropping him? Like, do we have any hope for this guy? Like what's going on?
You know, I'd like to say that there is hope. But I really think that if in the next 2 weeks we don't see him getting much usage, I think you go ahead and drop him. I mean, in redraft, I don't think that there's much of a compelling case for holding on to him because of what you'd be able to get on the waiver wire. And I'm assuming in dynasty leagues where people listening might have him, there's going to be far less options on the waiver wire. But it's definitely not encouraging. You know, in a team that has had so many spots where they could have used him for it just to never materialize, it really makes you wonder why it would ever happen now.
Yeah, and that's actually a huge bummer. But, you know, we really, I guess, not we, as in the Royal League, I guess it should just be me. I should have seen this coming. I've been a pretty big supporter of his. The only, I guess, small bright ray of light here is that John Hightower drew 4 targets. He had 1 catch, -2 yards. So maybe they're looking into Arcega-Whiteside a little bit. But Greg Ward saw 7 targets, and he, you know, had a pretty measly 5-for-31 line. But that's better than Arcega-Whiteside's 0-0-0-0 line, right? So I guess Ward is a guy who I'd consider like picking up in these really deep leagues, and maybe even in dynasty if you can get him. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's worth a shot. You could definitely do a lot worse to start off things. You know, I might not be quite as excited as you, but yeah, I could definitely see that being a viable option for different owners out there.
Well, here's something that's a little bit more exciting than Greg Ward talk. Russell Wilson completed 31 of 35 passes for 322 yards and 4 touchdowns in the Seahawks' 38-25 week 1 win over the Falcons. Dave, like, Wilson threw TDs to DK Metcalf, Greg Olsen, and 2 to Chris Carson. Do you think Seattle has finally decided to let Russ cook?
I'm not going to go out on a limb and say that, especially because 2 of them came to Chris Carson, which just doesn't feel like if you're really trying to let Russ cook the way that you would go about things. So I'm inclined to say this might have just been more situational in the way the game played out. But who knows? Maybe they're opening up things a little bit more. At the very least, it is really encouraging. And I have to just say, I was really shocked when all of a sudden at the bottom of my screen, I start seeing, you know, Chris Carson with the 1 receiving touchdown. And then I saw the 2nd one coming in. So yeah, it's pretty exciting. As far as the rest of the season goes, you know, there's reason to think that Metcalf might be the better option for fantasy. You know, he might be the more usable, better receiver, especially in a low volume. I mean, Lockett's been so efficient, right? But Metcalf, and Lockett's been good at finding the end zone, but it's possible Metcalf is just better at that. And I think that in this offense, that's what you're going to want. As far as Carson's receiving role goes, do I think that any other running backs will steal looks away from Carson? You know, unless Rashad Penny was available, I'm actually going to go with no here. What about you?
Yeah, so that's interesting because I don't think Rashad Penny is particularly good. And like, so myself and Sam Wallace, we did a massive breakdown of every backfield, and that was just came out like this over the course of this weekend, right? Just in time for week 1 kickoff. So it's already irrelevant, you know? But one of the things that we noted about the Seattle Seahawks' backfield is really it's Chris Carson's world, and the rest of the Seahawks running backs are just living in it, right?
Yeah.
You've got Carlos Hyde there. He also scored a touchdown, but didn't see much work until the very end. Like David Moore saw a carry, but like, so like one of the interesting things was that the Seahawks is like, rushing offense was stymied on the ground, and they actually took to the air, which is kind of cool to see. Travis Homer saw a handful of carries. You didn't see anything out of DJ Dallas, which is interesting because, you know, he seems to be the bigger guy. And you thought they'd give him some work, but I guess he was inactive. And Carlos Hyde saw seven carries as well. Interestingly, Carlos Hyde and Chris Carson both saw like an equal workload split from that perspective. And like Hyde actually rushed one in. But it's good to see Chris Carson having, you know, this outsized role in the receiving game. I mean, six targets, right? And like earlier this offseason, I heard Sean talking about how Chris Carson is one of the backs you want to break structure for, especially in the fourth or fifth round, because it's kind of a barren receiving core behind like Metcalf and Lockett, right? You got David Moore, Greg Olsen, Freddie Swain, Jacob Hollister. Like, what are these guys? Who are these guys, right?
Yep.
And it's interesting because like he was mentioning that like Chris Carson with all these like, you know, this the abilities to rack up like targets and receptions would be great on an offense that's fairly efficient, one like Seattle. To your point about DK Metcalf, man, the guy is just a freak. He actually averaged like 24 yards a catch. Did you see his touchdown? It was just ridiculous, 40 yards out.
I actually did not see the replay of that yet.
Yeah, take some time and watch it because it's just, I mean, it's everything you wanted to see out of this kid. It's who like Metcalf backers thought he was, you know?
Yeah.
And that to me is really, really kind of interesting because he's just this like physical specimen who's able to glide across the field. And again, like Lockett, he's efficient, right? Like, and if you're able to like convert these long touchdowns, but you're bigger body and you're able to bring, you know, make this a jump ball catch in the red zone. I'm with you. I think DK Metcalf, like this might be like that massive sophomore emergence.
Yeah. Well, you know, the thing here too, that's interesting is Lockett did go 8 for 8, 92 yards. And so I think we should probably say, you know, that this isn't a mutually exclusive thing here, you know, so it's not an indictment on Lockett. It might just be that, like you said, DK Metcalf does live up to what people thought could be there. And if I'm Russell Wilson and I'm in a situation where I'm looking to get a touchdown, now granted, you don't, as you said, maybe it was a longer one than we're normally going to see from Metcalf today. But, you know, if I'm in a zone where I'm looking to put the ball to a big bodied guy, Metcalf is like the perfect target.
Yeah. But like the good thing is this is a very skinny passing tree, right? You've got Metcalf, you've got Lockett, and you've got Carson. It doesn't look like the tight ends are just seeming like they're seeming to just split work here. Like you've got Olsen in on some plays, Disley in on some plays, Hollister in on some plays. So I think this is a very concentrated passing tree. So I think you can just start both. Like you know, if they are letting Russ cook, we could see Metcalf and Lockett both as end the season as wide receiver ones.
Yeah, that would be something. I do want to take a moment here, though, just to say that I am disappointed that Will Disley wasn't able to put together just another insane performance because we're starting to get away from that scenario where every time Disley plays, he just goes bananas.
Always next week, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And before we get into one of our new games, Fantasy Believe It or Not, a word from our sponsors. This football season will be different, and Pepsi is here to get you ready for game day, no matter how you watch this season. I mean, look, Dave, I was just earlier sitting around, we ordered pizza, and we ordered some Pepsi with our pizza, and it was just fantastic game day experience, you know, because Pepsi is the refreshment you need to power through the game day and become a member of the League of Football Watchers, you know? We're passionate fans in this household, and we are the real generational talent fueled by Pepsi, because Pepsi isn't made for those who play the game. It's made for those who watch it, like you and me. And just believe it, like Pepsi is made for football watching. And even though sports had a break, your business didn't. You have to keep moving, and that makes hiring more important than ever. And guess what? Indeed, it's here to help. Indeed.com is the number one job site in the world because Indeed gets you the best people fast. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring. You only pay for what you need. You can pause your account at any time, and there are no long-term contracts. Plus, Indeed provides powerful tools to make your search that much easier. Like sponsored jobs, which are shown to be 3.5 times more likely to result in a hire. With 73% of online job seekers visiting Indeed each month, Indeed is going to get you the important hire you just like they have for over 3 million businesses. Right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates will see it faster. Try Indeed out. with a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. This is their best offer available anywhere. Go right now to Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Offer valid through September 30th.
At RotoViz, we love titles. We love hardware. We love championships. We love winning. And we love it when you do it too. In 2020, one thing we want to win with you is the Underdog Fantasy Best Ball Mania $1 million Best Ball Tournament. It's $200,000 to first place. It's only $25 to enter. It's a no-brainer. This is like the elite best ball title this year. So you got to go to UnderdogFantasy.com or download their great Underdog Fantasy app in the App Store on your smartphone device, and you're going to make a deposit. You're going to use code ROTOVIZ when you make that deposit. Then you're going to go refer five friends, and Underdog and ROTOVIZ will give you a free entry into the Best Ball Mania tournament. So it's kind of like a two-for-one. You sign up, you put in 25 bucks, you enter the Best Ball Mania tournament, you get five buddies to play, you use code ROTOVIZ, you get a free entry. No-brainer, guys. Let's chase that glory. 200 grand. If $25 is too pricey for you, they've got a $5 tournament called The Bubble, and you can win 20 grand in that bad boy. Their app is slick. You click on the player's name, you see the ownership, you see the latest news and notes. You can draft from that app with no problem. Man, they really knocked it out of the park with this product, and I can't wait for you to try it. So go to UnderdogFantasy.com today, make a deposit, and use code ROTOVIZ, and chase that glory.
All right, Dave, welcome to one of our new games, Fantasy Believe It or Not. Basically, I'm going to describe a fantasy performance from the day, and you're going to tell me whether we should believe it or not. A little bit like Ripley's Believe It or Not, but for fantasy.
I really like this one. Yeah, let's do it.
All right, Giovanni Bernard caught 4 or 5 passes for 21 yards in the Bengals' week one loss to the Chargers.
Oh, yeah, I think that's one where you got to go believe, right? This is the type of thing that we've seen Giovanni Bernard do a number of times. We've seen Giovanni Bernard when he fills in for whoever the team's RB1 is that time, just perform. Bit of a down day for Joe Mixon, but I think even if Joe Mixon is getting a lot of usage, a line like this for Bernard is something that, you know, could be reasonably expected.
Yeah, so just to add on to that, I actually mentioned in one of the Ultimate Zero RB posts that Giovanni Bernard, like, we should expect him to see a lot of the receiving work. I believe Joe Mixon only saw a couple of targets, if I'm not mistaken. My stats aren't really pulling up quickly, but I do believe that is correct.
I'm trying to grab it for you, so keep going.
Yeah, to that point, right? So, like, Giovanni, this is not a fantasy ceiling type of performance, or neither is it the kind of floor you want. What it is a leech performance. Like, and I use that in like our the article a lot, like the term fantasy leech. Like, this is a guy stealing away 5 targets from another running back, and he's not really adding much to a lineup, right?
Yep.
But like, those are 7 points that like Mixon could have used to go from like whatever his final fantasy finish was to like post a high end performance, and he's not getting that, you know? And so like, that's where it gets really interesting for me, because it's not great. I mean, like, he ran more pass routes than Mixon did last year. And for as long as he's healthy, I mean, that's a kind of a cap on Mixon's upside, which is a bit frustrating if you took him at the 1-2 turn, right?
Well, for sure. And then, I mean, I know it's just this one game to start off the season. Mixon did have 19 rushing attempts. That's encouraging. Bernard only had 1. But as far as targets go, Bernard had 5 to Mixon's 2. Neither of those totals are that impressive. But like you said, if Mixon's only getting 2 targets a game, and even if he's having more performances as a rusher like he did down the stretch to end last season, those 2 targets might not be enough to help him justify the position where people were drafting him. So hopefully that changes as we move forward.
Robbie Anderson caught 6 of 8 targets for 115 yards and a touchdown in the Panthers' week one loss to the Raiders.
Okay, I would, believe it or not, like, I was putting Anderson on my teams at the end of it. I was just really hoping that we'd see DJ Moore be the player putting up the 6 of 8 targets for 115 yard, you know, stat line to open things up. Do I think this is going to carry every week? No. Will DJ Moore put things together a little bit more? Yes. But, you know, hey, Robbie Anderson, I think, is the type of player that you can see games like this from. So it shouldn't be that much of a surprise, but still, to start off the season, for me, it has to go under the, I guess I would say believe it or not. I guess I would just say not believe. There, that works.
Yeah, I mean, from a weekly perspective, absolutely. I mean, from a best ball perspective, this is kind of what you wanted him, right? Like, he was going fairly late in best ball. This is what you wanted him. I believe all you guys ranked him fairly aggressively towards the end there. Like, you guys were just rocketing him up your boards.
Yep.
But what's even better, again, and we talked a little bit about skinny target trees earlier with the Seahawks. But Anderson had 8 targets, Moore had 9 targets, and Curtis Samuel had 8 targets. I mean, Curtis Samuel really didn't do all that much with his targets. And like, that's going to be one where it'll be interesting to see where they go. They only gave McCaffrey 4 targets. So it seems like falling in a negative script there was good for the wideouts. And given, you know, the state of the defense, they might just seem a negative script a lot more. Again, with DJ Moore seeing 9 targets, the volume's there. It'll all snap back together, right?
Yeah. You know, you make a good point. Actually, this is one of those games where having not had the chance to go back and actually like watch the condensed film of it yet doesn't feel that good for Moore. But I guess, you know, 9 targets is nothing to complain about. Only 54 yards. But listen, I think that Moore is a good enough player that you give him 9 targets. Some weeks he's going to break one of those for a long play, find the end zone. No need to worry yet.
Adrian Peterson rushed 14 times for 93 yards in week 1 against Chicago.
Believe it or no, I would not have believed this. Should I have believed it? Yes. But it's just like, you know, he just gets signed. The man's like a million years old at this point. We know that he's such a unique physical specimen, but still, I had these hopes for DeAndre Swift just a couple of weeks ago. Kerryon Johnson looked like such a great zero running back play. I don't know, man. Maybe it's Adrian Peterson. What do you think? It's not going to last.
Here's the craziest thing about all this. He had 3 targets. when do you ever see Adrian Peterson? Anyway, so to your point, yes, Adrian Peterson signed off the street. Look, we know Adrian Peterson is a phenomenal like running back who can like run between the tackles. And that's what he did. Like, he averaged 6.6 yards a carry. Street free agent. Kerryon Johnson, huge bummer. Here's the craziest thing about Swift is he saw 5 targets, unfortunately, and this is really sad. The poor guy dropped that like what could have been a second touchdown in the end zone. I felt so bad for him. But like, the only thought going through my head was like, oh, so Matt Patricia is going to use Kerryon, like DeAndre Swift in like the 2-minute drill and around the goal line where he got 1 touchdown. So if you're using your rookie second round running back in the highest leverage situations in the game, including trusting him to take a target that was essentially the game winning pass, why are you not paying him more? And like, that's my question.
Yeah.
Like what is going on through that man's head? Matt Patricia's is, I don't know. And I'm hoping that we can figure it out. It's a bit of a bummer. Because I'm looking at like the target share here. Danny Amendola is going to be a bit of an issue. Like, I think just going forward a little bit for like Swift's interim value, I'm really, really optimistic on Swift's value over the long run. He was a little expensive to really call a quote unquote zero RB target, but I'm pretty optimistic that he comes on hot down the stretch, around week, hopefully, around the bye weeks. But, anytime you're ready, Swift, please.
Well, you know, though, I do want to just pop in here quickly just to say it is only week 1. I know it feels like all of a sudden we're seeing these things and, you know, we finally have something tangible. And, you know, who knows what plays out in these situations, but that's kind of the point. So I just want to give my, obligatory, make sure that you don't overreact to everything too much in week 1, right?
Oh, I'm with you 100%. Yeah. I'm just amped because we're going from 0 to 60 with football back. And I actually genuinely have enjoyed the fact that there were no preseason games and the offseason was as murky as it is.
Yep.
Because there was like people were just making horrific drafting mistakes during the fog of war. And this next guy is actually a pretty good example of that. Marquez Valdez-Scantling caught 4 of 6 targets for 96 yards and 1 touchdown in the Packers' week 1 win over the Vikings.
You know, for me, that'd be a not as well. Like, this just wasn't something that I was going to expect. You know, one of the things that Freeman and I have talked a lot on our show about now for a couple of seasons is that this wide receiver 2, maybe even wide receiver 3 position in Green Bay feels heading into the season like it should carry value. But what we've seen is that Davante Adams ends up being the only receiver that's able to carry value from the beginning of the season to the end. However, we're looking at a game today. Aaron Rodgers throws 4 touchdown passes. Not only does MVS get involved, but we also see Allen Lazard. So maybe there's something there. I wouldn't have expected it. But now that we saw that type of performance we did today, you know, I'm thinking it could continue, especially in the NFC North, which was a division that when you looked at our advanced strength of schedule metrics, looked like one that set up nicely for wide receivers to have a good season.
Yeah, so I agree with you in that, like, trying to basically figure out who Green Bay's wide receiver 2 or 3 is has absolutely been folly. Because like the ADP never matches what happens when we actually, you know, break camp. It's just been absolutely ridiculously like how off script. I mean, MVS was going in like the 9th round last year, where, you know, basically where Lazard is going this year. So it's only karmic justice, because that the roles are flipped, you know?
Yep. Yeah, I know. So we'll see. I guess though that for me, the larger takeaway here is maybe if you have one of these guys, you can start to feel like decent that you're going to get something this year.
Oh, for sure. And we'll just have to wait and see how it happens, because you mentioned it is only just week one. Colts is running back Nyheim Hines rushed 7 times for 28 yards and a score. He also tacked on 8 catches for 45 yards and another TD in Indianapolis week one loss to Jacksonville.
Let's give that man a round of applause. What a performance that was. That would be another believe it or not. Like, I just would not have expected that. Now, granted, we did have some unforeseen things. Marlon Mack with the Achilles injury. Hopefully it's not too serious. If it is, then Hines definitely hits as one of those 0 running back targets, even with Jonathan Taylor. What we started to see was, we knew this going into the year, right? Phillip Rivers likes to dump it off. Hey, 8 catches. Nyheim Hines can definitely do that. Scores the touchdown. I think that this could continue. I would have thought, though, that it would be Jonathan Taylor scoring the 20-plus points this week. So I'm a little disappointed there. Still, though, you know, perhaps we have a situation where both of these guys, who I've been big fans of, you know, string together good seasons.
Yeah, so I'm with you. It's a little surprising. I mean, so in the 0RB ultimate watch list, I did mention that the wide receiver core behind T.Y. Hilton was fairly wide open as we entered the season, and it seems to be fairly wide open. Paris Campbell seems to have actually stepped up.
Yeah, that's
Jonathan.
True.
With Jonathan Taylor, saw 6 targets, caught all 6 for 67 yards. Really, that I'm actually kind of impressed that the guys who were doubting whether or not Jonathan Taylor can catch the football are what they're doing. But that's okay. And then, you know, you have Hines who's stepping up as well. So and then you got the rest of these also Rams, Mo Alley Cox, Zach Pascal, stuff. You know, guys like that. Even or you know their second round pick, Michael Pittman, whatever. Right. So you've got. It's interesting, and I do think that Hines might actually be a role that he carves out this year going forward, because it is kind of unsettled. And I do believe that the fear here is so Mack actually, I believe, was stretchered off, and the fear is that he tore his Achilles, which is a real shame for him.
Yep. Yeah, though, but so, and this might be entirely unrelated to where you wanted me to go with things here. So I'm going this way anyways, because I'm just so enamored with Jonathan Taylor. But isn't it so interesting? You almost had to know that in 2020, we're going to have a situation where Clyde Edwards-Helaire, I believe, finished that game against the Texans on Thursday night with 0 targets, 0 receptions. We see Jonathan Taylor going 100% on his 6 targets. So 2020.
You know what? Actually, had I actually sat down and thought, oh yeah, 2020 is going to hit this game hard. Well, if you want to talk about 2020 hitting this game hard, talk about Jacksonville, the Jaguars, like winning.
Oh yeah, outright. That's right.
Like there's a survivor pool that I'm in, and half the field is actually fully eliminated because they're all one Indianapolis Colts.
Oh, wow. Not that many people care here, but yeah. Who'd you go with to start? I'm actually not in a survivor pool, so I'm interested.
The Bills.
Oh, nice. Nice. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I get the excitement of going with the road dog. I mean, road favorite, but, later, see you half the field.
Yeah.
The Kareem Hunt rushed 13 times for 72 yards in the Browns' week one loss to the Ravens. He also added 4 catches for 9 yards.
Yeah, I believe it. I think that they're, especially when the team decided to sign Hunt on that, I believe it was a 2-year extension, that had to be a signal that they were planning on using him. So I think that this is representative probably of the type of split that we're going to see between them through the rest of the season. If you're a Chubb owner, I think what you're hoping for each week is going to be those touchdowns. I think that it's going to be hard for Chubb to give you what he was giving his owners in the beginning of last season. And that's just kind of something you're going to have to live with. So if you're a person that got Kareem Hunt, you know, towards the beginning of the summer, because I think he did start to creep up a little bit. You're feeling really good. If you're a Chubb owner who got Chubb, even in like round two, I think you're starting to feel a little uncomfortable.
Yeah. So the interesting thing was just the fact that like the Browns spent so much time in negative script here. I mean, Baker Mayfield looked like just just trash, garbage. But you know, we're gonna really get a better idea of what they're gonna do in the event where they face similarly poor teams in the Bengals and Washington in the next 2 weeks. So let's see how they handle it, because you can see if you can like envision the Browns falling behind early, that might just have to be a signal where you're starting Hunt and just sitting Chubb, unfortunately.
Yeah, you know, the other thing that I just want to quickly mention here too is I've been a big proponent of just how talented I think that Nick Chubb is. I think he's a tremendous running back. But when you look at these two backs as a whole, I don't think that anybody's going to tell you that there's this huge discrepancy between the two, which is another reason why this Hunt signing is particularly impactful.
Hey, I'm with you. And let's talk a little bit about, let's keep this to backup RBs as well. So Joshua Kelly rushed for 60 yards and a TD on 12 carries in the Chargers' week one win over the Bengals.
You know, I don't think I would have had this reflected anywhere in anything that I put together, but I guess this is one of those, I'm going to say, believe it, just in that I think there were reasons to point to Austin Eckler not getting all of the work. You know, Curtis Patrick had talked about Joshua Kelly being the type of guy that makes for a solid pick, and that had a compelling case for being somebody that would get involved. And here it is coming to fruition. So yeah, definitely encouraging. And I'm kind of wishing that I'd gotten more exposure to Kelly than I did. Cause yes, it's only 1 week. It is week one, but hey, I mean, this is something you can point to as a really positive start.
Yeah, and I believe, I keep referring to it because it's fresh in my mind, but yep. in the Ultimate Zero RB watch list, I did mention that Joshua Kelly was clearly running as a running back two in camp. Justin Jackson seems to, and then Sean noticed this as well, was that Justin Jackson was dealing with some kind of an injury, and he seems to have re-hurt himself, and he had to leave the game.
Yep.
Austin Eckler, I should be receiving a lot bigger target share. But I don't know what they're doing. I mean, I guess running like Tyrod doesn't really like target the quarterbacks, running backs for some odd reason, which is really stupid because like Eckler is ostensibly one of their best playmakers with the ball in his hands, especially in space.
Yeah, you know, so this is one that I'm really interested to go back and actually be able to watch some of this game, because I heard people talking about Taylor like he played absolutely horribly. So that's not helping, you know, any of these players out.
Yeah, this is just, so we had Kevin Cole on the pod a couple of weeks ago, and he mentioned the same thing. Just like Taylor was terrible when he was at Cleveland as well. Like he was really like, just abominably bad, right? Like, yep. and it didn't take long for him to get like benched. And I think that that's happening again.
Can I share one? This is entirely unrelated to anything. But earlier in the week, I was looking at some things. Do you remember when Terrell Pryor was playing receiver for Cleveland?
Oh, yeah.
Dude, his numbers that year were actually pretty crazy.
It's why I bought in.
Yeah. So anyway, unrelated there, but that's worth people going and taking a quick Google on.
Oh, for sure. Like it's crazy how close he came to like being a thing.
Yeah, I know. It really is.
All right, so item number three, Zach Moss rushed 9 times for 11 yards in the Bills' week one win over the Jets. He also added 3 receptions for 16 yards and a touchdown. Dave, that may not sound like much, but he appeared like Moss appeared to be the clear-cut goal line back for the Bills, despite Singletary, you know, getting the quote-unquote start. You know, do you think Moss has earned himself some increased playing time going forward, or is it just something that you want to monitor and you're kind of iffy on starting either player?
You know, I really don't have a good feel for what a team like the Bills will do. But I think that you have to view this as a sign that the team already is recognizing the fact that it's possible Moss might be a more talented back, or at the very least is the type of guy they have to get usage for. The fact that he's already scored a touchdown, you know, in the receiving game, I think is something that's important. And, you know, I've started to feel better and better about Moss as time went along this summer. So yeah, I'm buying the fact that he's probably going to get more playing time. You know, the rushes of 9 yards doesn't feel like a lot, but still, He is a player that is a rookie playing behind a player who had a bit of a surprising year last year with how good he was. And the team just could have said, we're going to trust Singletary. We're going to let him start off. We'll kind of work Moss in, slowly see how he does. But I think that's a pretty good volume for a guy like Moss right off the bat. So I'd feel good about that if I'm a Moss owner.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, so we were lucky enough to get Moss, and the TD that he scored was actually a receiving TD. Realistically, the goal line back here and their primary running back is Josh Allen. Mm-hmm. I mean, he had 57 rushing yards today. He had, I believe, 2 rushing touchdowns as well. So, like, what are you going to do, right?
Right.
Like, right. And it's kind of just to, you know, close the loop here. Similar to this next player in Cam Newton, who completed 15 of 19 passes for 155 yards, and he rushed for 75 yards and 2 scores on 15 carries in the Patriots' Week 1 win over the Dolphins. Dave, I put this question in especially for you. I know you're a Patriots fan. We can end with them. You know, what were your thoughts here on Cam Newton's debut?
I thought it was a fantastic debut for a couple of reasons. Just that we were able to see Cam come into a game where it looked like he had a pretty decent feel with some of these players. Josh McDaniels and the offense seemed really excited about having him incorporated in. They used him in, some fun ways. He was running a lot. There's a couple of plays where he was just doing things that you wouldn't see Tom Brady doing. So I think that gives a new element, naturally, that defenses are going to have to account for. I also thought that we saw him start to have a bit of a connection with N'Keal Harry, possibly Julian Edelman, still remained involved. Do I think this is one of the best offenses you're going to see in the NFL? No, just because I don't think the overall talent is there. But for this weird offseason, for Cam to come in, gel with the offense like that, we didn't get to see him do too much as a passer, but, you know, he gets the 2 touchdowns on the ground. He looked really healthy, I thought. Overall, this has to get you pretty pumped up. I'd like to see another player in this offense emerge. You know, the running back situation, though, is going to be one that I'm still not really sure what we do. And it looks like they're going to want Cam to be involved as a rusher. So as long as he's not banged up, that only really muddies the waters even further in the running back situation, which in hindsight is something that people probably should have been talking about even more when discussing these running backs. The knock was, you're not going to know which one to play. But we weren't even really always accounting for the fact that, you know, Cam might be taking away the most important stat those guys are going to get, being touchdowns.
Yeah, and like, I actually was kind of cognizant of the fact that Cam was going to be doing that. He kind of did that during his time in Carolina anyway. He's one of just the best red zone rushers. I just didn't know how much we'd expect to see of him because he had that foot injury, right?
Yep.
And like, he has zero compunction about checking down to the running backs. Like, he is a very good passer of the football. And at the very least, correct me if I'm wrong, but James White, very, very good at what he does, right?
Oh my God. Yeah, James White's fantastic. I actually think that it's possible James White is the most talented player that we have on the offensive side of the ball, you know, when it comes to doing exactly what he does. How good Cam is, we'll get to see. You know, maybe he's actually better. And maybe I'm underselling Edelman. Who knows? Maybe Harry's as good as he is, I thought, coming out of the school. But, you know, to the question, James White's really, really good at what he does.
Yeah. I mean, Blair and I were talking about this a little bit, and like, I had AJ Brown ranked ahead of Harry.
Me too.
Right.
Yep.
But like, it's very difficult because, you know, the kind of similar-ish profiles, kind of similar-ish builds and statures and speed. I just thought AJ Brown was a significantly better prospect. And I think that that's something that I couldn't really put why to it. But I just, you know, I figured against the level of competition, some kind of like reason that I'm just stating now because I wanted to back into it. But that's the thing is, like, I don't know what it was about AJ Brown versus Harry.
Yeah.
That I preferred. But like, you know, I mean, Harry flashed some upside with Brady there last year.
Yep.
And I'm kind of optimistic on his outlook here. And I'm kind of optimistic in Cam. I mean, let's get real here, right? So like, the Dolphins, they're basically the Cleveland Browns from like a couple of years ago for this season in terms of like how optimistic people were on them, right?
Right.
You know, like, this is still a team that if the Patriots are as bad as we think they should be, they shouldn't just be manhandling the squad. And I do, and I'm really not sure how long Ryan Fitzpatrick or how long of a leash he has, especially now that the team has selected Tua Tagovailoa.
Yep.
Like, with their, you know, this is a very, and I hate to draw this parallel again, it's kind of like Tyrod and Baker, where you select a quarterback so early, your fan base at some point is going to demand you move to them. whether your coaching staff thinks they're ready to play or not. This is not an Alex Smith, Patrick Mahomes situation.
Yeah, you know, also, he's a guy that figures to be pretty exciting in a lot of phases. So, you know, some of the things that Ryan Fitzpatrick could do that make you inclined to play him, you know, it's very possible the team thinks that Tua can do the same type of stuff. So, you know, I don't see any reason not to rush him in there if things are going south, other than trying to protect his health. But, you know, it's very likely that they're interested in just seeing what he can do. So we'll have to see there. You know, as you mentioned, though, about I want to go back to Harry there, though, for a couple of seconds. I think what broke the tie for me between Harry and AJ Brown was the fact that we saw Brown playing alongside Metcalf, and in so many cases did appear to be the better receiver. So for me, that was the type of thing that I could use to break the tie.
And Ingram. But he was a rookie.
Exactly. So there was kind of that piece, which I think was pretty big. And then it looks like AJ Brown might be one of those guys who just has it, whatever it is. And I'm not sure that Harry does. But I also felt like today, with the way that the team was operating the offense, the different sets that they were in, it worked to getting a young receiver like Harry going. There's going to be some plays where it's a more simple route. You know, just hit him on a quick type of pass, get his confidence up and keep things moving. So I'm feeling pretty pumped up about him, too. Though I do have to ask you, Miles Gaskin, not a crazy amount of workload overall, but it did look to me like Miami wants to get him involved in this game. Matt Breida did not get many looks. As far as Gaskin goes, do you think that he should be a guy we're looking to get on the waiver wire? I don't know how much of that game you saw, but Miami was using him early and fairly often.
Yeah, so this is one where I was drawing on in the zero RB like washes. I had him like as the RB4.
Yep.
And I was running off of the assumption from what Miami did last year, right? Which was they didn't use Gaskin at all.
Yep.
And that's changed. And this is despite signing Jordan Howard in free agency and trading a fifth for Matt Breida. I mean, Jordan Howard is just like the ideal. Like, why were you drafting him in wherever round you were at? Like, he just would go off the board.
Yeah.
And I gun to my head, I don't know where he would go. Right. Like, and I'm just trying to like look at one of the drafts that I've done. Let me look at it and just see where he went in mine.
Yeah.
Actually, you know what? What actually might make more sense? Can you actually tell me where he went in your most, the last main event draft you did for the FFPC?
I think it was probably. I honestly think it might have been around like 9 or 10.
What?
It might have been that late. Hold on, though. If you give me 2 seconds here, I can open this up.
Late? That's early.
Oh, is it? Well,
yeah. I mean, like when you're drafting someone there, right? That's kind of like you're drafting a flex player.
Well, you know, yeah, actually, that's a good point. I'm going to be honest with you, though, Hassan. I have done so many drafts over the last, like,
oh yeah,
same. 5 days. It's all a blur, and I really don't know. But now I'm hold on.
Yeah,
I'm opening this up. So let's see. So the last one that I would have done would have been and we're gonna find out that I was lying about that. I think this is great radio for everybody out there.
Yeah. So but sorry, but I'm just curious, everybody.
I have it up. No, Jordan Howard. Yeah, round 10.
My God, man!
You want to know who he went to?
You guys?
Yeah, he went to me in this case, and really the only reason was when I was looking down my board.
Let me guess. Supreme Zero RB build.
Yep, and I basically had all of the other running backs in that range. I was around like 30%, and I only had Howard on like one team across all the teams that I have. So it just made sense.
You hedged out. You hedged out.
Yeah, exactly.
That's fine.
Yeah, but so the point is, you know, he was going pretty late, case was early.
But from a preseason perspective, it makes sense because they brought this guy in on free agency theoretically because they weren't happy with who they had on the roster.
Yep.
And now you're telling me that they are happy with who they have on the roster, right? So I think next week's going to be kind of interesting to see what happens. It does look like they're clearly using Breida in like this hurry up role.
Yep.
Which is, you know, so if you expect them to get blown out or whatever, you should be like hoping Breida does something because it looks like Breida's kind of lacking that like that patented burst a little bit. But yeah.
And then just so everybody knows, the breakdown was Gaskin 9 attempts, Howard 8, Breida 5 attempts. And then, you know, we actually saw Breda is zero targets, two for Patrick Laird, yes, and then four for Gaskin. So kind of an interesting split between all of the backs.
Yeah, and that's where it's weird because they got all four RBs active.
Yeah. And then, of course, you know, you have fullback Chandler Cox there as well, who I don't think actually recorded anything, but I just felt like mentioning him because he's on the sheet I'm looking at right now.
Awesome. Yeah, no, I think that like Howard's just the guy that you might have to just plug him in when the Finns are favored, and hopefully they're favored for a while.
Yeah,
I wouldn't know when, but like, yeah, I kind of feel you with like the need to hedge out because like when you're building out a portfolio, you're going to have to balance out your risk somewhere. Right.
Right. Well, you know, and the other thing was with and I wasn't even really factoring in Gaskin, which, yeah, I probably should have been. But it was just the thought of like, you know, there's a good chance that something crazy happens and Howard has to be the one that emerges and the team uses, especially because we know that there are issues with Breda's health. So it just felt like a guy you'd want to get a little bit of exposure to. But, you know, we'll see how things go there. I will say after leaving today, I think the player I'd be most interested in would be Gaskin because he has that good mixture of being used in the receiving game, being used as a rusher. And, you know, it feels like game scripts, maybe he has the access to the majority of them or to more of those game scripts, the different way things can break than the other two.
I'm definitely kind of excited at the very least for pretty much, I guess, just week two. I mean, if you want to talk a little bit about we're at the halftime, just for the listeners, whoever's still listening, we're at halftime of the Cowboys Rams game, and buddy, CeeDee Lamb is the truth.
Is he? I have not seen this yet. What's he doing?
Oh my God. Five targets, four catches, 57 yards.
Oh, nice.
He's the leading receiver on the Dallas Cowboys.
Oh, nice. I will be happy about this too, because, you know, with Freeman really thought that Jerry Jeudy was the better receiver. I liked CeeDee Lamb a little bit more. You know, Freeman's going to like it either way because CeeDee Lamb is on the Cowboys, but it makes me happy nonetheless.
Hey, Jeudy plays tomorrow, and with Cortland Sutton looking very, very iffy, it's going to be very interesting to see what he does.
Yeah, actually, that's a great point. I guess I can't write off Jeudy yet, seeing as the guy hasn't even played yet.
Yeah, but this is very reminiscent of that AJ Brown rookie game where he just came out and it's just dominated the opposition. I mean, AJ Brown did it on like four targets because the Dead Titans and all that, but like he had 100 yards.
Yeah,
but man, buddy, CeeDee Lamb is the truth.
Is, you know, the other thing that's been disappointing. Well, granted, I only saw a little bit before we got on here, but dude, feels like the Rams really want to make a point to keep Malcolm Brown involved. I saw Cam Akers getting some usage.
I'm so mad. It's gonna be like the week one. Like Malcolm Brown just shows up. Like they just have to justify the amount of money they're paying him at this point, right?
Yeah, that might be true.
Like just they're paying him so much, and like Cam Akers is clearly so much better.
Yep.
Like at the very least, like Akers still has the one target, and like Brown has three. I don't know why McVay is using him as like the primary back. I'm really optimistic and really bullish on Akers. I was taking him in the sixth everywhere. Like if I missed, like I was trying to like split my exposure between Akers and Swift in the sixth.
Yeah, I could completely get that, and you know, I think that they're both players that in a different class with things going slightly different ways, people would have been all over. And, you know, I think some people weren't sure what to do with Akers' landing spot in LA. But so far, it's looking like this team's keeping pace with Dallas. They actually might have an offense that can put things together and allow Akers to be the type of back that some of us were thinking he could be.
Yeah, provided Sean McVay stops deciding that like Malcolm Brown is actually worth getting carries to.
Right, right. That's the key caveat. Yes.
So tilting because like Akers is so talented. I mean, you know, you can get a 10% discount to RotoViz using our promo code, which is RotoViz Radio.
Yeah. So actually, all you have to do. Well, there's two ways you can do this. You can go to the RotoViz and then go to the podcast homepage, and there's directions there. Or when you go to checkout, so you go to RotoViz, you go to subscribe, you enter the promo code RVRadio2020 for the 1 year subscription, you get 10% off.
Yeah, and that way you get access to all of our great tools and information. Quite frankly, I was looking at the prospect box score scout when I was writing up Cam Akers for the Ultimate Zero RB watch list. And man, this guy's like ceiling comps are mouthwatering. and his basement comps are like scary. And I really think that he's closer to the ceiling than he is to the basement. You know what I mean?
Well, yes, because as I've been preaching for what feels like a year now, this guy was playing behind a non-existent offensive line at Florida State, the worst offensive line, maybe even just talent-wise, since they've had since like the 70s. It really was that bad. And I'm not saying like in comparison to what the school had at that time. I literally mean the overall, if you assigned every player on the line a Madden rating, it might have been the worst it ever was at like any period. Yes. Yes. When Akers was there, it was so bad.
Yeah. And actually that was the one thing that I like, I really think that's not his athletic comps that is like pulling the rating down. It's his production.
Right.
And that's where you're going like a step further. You're mentioning, oh yeah, the Madden, like it's the O-line. Why you couldn't get anything going, which, you know, it kind of matters if you're unable to get anything going.
Exactly. Well, the other thing too, is that team was in complete shambles. Like the offense, you had a situation where Jimbo Fisher basically quit on the team. And then when he left, Florida State brought in Willie Taggart. The system he was trying to run just did not work for the offensive line that they did have there for the players that were remaining. There was a lot of like JUCO transfers getting involved, players that were not Division I players. The offense just had like no identity. You know, it was a complete disaster. But if you look at his freshman season at a very young age, you know, was just so tremendous. And as I've said now on so many shows, I'm sure people have heard this, but there really were reasons when you looked at his freshman year that he was the best back out of those guys that had to come before him that included Dalvin Cook, Devonta Freeman, Chris Thompson. He really looked like he might have been more talented than any of those guys.
Oh, by far. But now we're just rambling on to ramble. That will do it for this edition of the Fantasy Football Report. Some very special thanks to our guest, Dave Cabin. Be sure to follow him on Twitter at DaveCabinFF. Remember to rate and review the RotoViz Radio news, RotoViz Radio channel on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. For Blair Andrews, I'm Hassan Rahim. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to the Fantasy Football Report. Please rate and review the RotoViz Radio podcast channel on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Contact us via email, rotovizradio@gmail.com, and follow us on Twitter, @RotoVizRadio. And remember, you can always support the pod by subscribing to RotoViz at a 30% discount through the RotoViz Radio homepage, rotoviz.com/podcast. Somebody say playoffs? NBA and NHL are playing for the gold, and our partners at BetOnline have you covered. Get in on all the action, including a new NBA bracket contest with plenty of chances to win. MLB season is pushing into fall, and there's no shortage of ways to bet with hundreds of odds, futures, and props. So take advantage of the return of sports, and remember, the casino never closes. Check it out all day, all night. Go to betonline.ag and use promo code BLUEWIRE to receive your welcome bonus. That's betonline.ag, promo code BLUEWIRE. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.